talks like an animal. Must be an animal. Come hear the animals. Talking animal. Talking animal.
Good morning, this is Talking Animals on WMNF. I'm Duncan Strauss. My guest today is Kevin Nealon, the veteran comedian and longtime animal advocate, also a former Saturday Night Live star. Amidst a long list of television and film credits, Nealon is touring behind his latest stand-up special, Loose in the Crotch, released in late January, and he will be performing this Friday and Saturday, March 27th and 28th, at Side Splitters in Tampa. Spanning many years, Nealon has supported a number of animal welfare organizations, including Farm Sanctuary. For instance, he hosted Farm Sanctuary's 30th anniversary gala, Best Friends Animal Society, working to promote their no-kill initiatives to prevent pet homelessness. He's long articulated the merits of pet adoption. More recently, he's voiced support for the Appalachian Trail Conservancy, an immensely important wilderness corridor playing a pivotal role for wildlife. Perhaps not entirely coincidentally, he has for several years hosted a YouTube series, Hiking with Kevin, featuring Nealon taking celebrity guests like Conan O'Brien, Sheryl Crow, and Martin Short on casual hikes, an approach that often plays as a breezy mockery of the talk show format. We'll likely discuss hiking with Kevin, comedy, animals, and more when I speak with Kevin Nealon here in just a moment on Talking Animals on WMNF. Coming up later on today's program, I'll play back the interview I recorded recently with Emiliana Fugger, a Wellington resident, sea turtle advocate, and author of the new book, Anatomy Under the Sea, The Adventures of Luna the Loggerhead. She's also a popular lecturer, visiting schools and other locations, delivering her turtle talks. I guess this is where I should mention that Emiliana Fugger is 9 years old. We'll hear about the obstacle she hit in trying to complete her science fair project and how that obstacle spurred her to write the book, the challenges she's faced along the way, and more when I play back my interview with Emiliana Fugger later today here on Talking Animals on WNF. Right now, though, let's get into our conversation with Kevin Nealon, with a reminder that I invite you to join the conversation by calling 813-239-9663, emailing dj@wmnf.org, or texting 813-433-0885. Let's welcome Kevin Nealon back to Talking Animals on WMNF. Good morning, Kevin.
Good morning. How are you?
Great. Thanks for joining us again on Talking Animals.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me. I love animals.
Well, that's partly why you're here. That's the nature of the show. But I've been fortunate enough to speak with you on this show a few times over the years, so it's great to welcome you back. And in previous conversations, we've discussed various animal welfare issues and being a vegetarian. You know, it's funny, I was preparing this and I was seeing certain odd details stick. One thing I still remember that you mentioned in our first conversation 23 plus years ago was tuna. And back then it was something from a vegetarian's pantry, like a tuna substitute, but I'm not even sure it still exists now. So that shows you how things shift over the years.
Yeah, well, you know, I got that originally in one of those little Bergotas, whatever they're called, those little convenience stores in New York City.
Oh, Bodega,
Bodega, yeah. and they had also the fake chicken, too, simulated chicken.
And what was there, called? Did it have his catchy name as Tuno? Tuno's hard to beat as a name.
It was probably Chico.
Yeah, like also one of the Marx Brothers, yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
So in a possible parallel, and, correct me obviously if I'm wrong here, but kind of like the tuna receding, it appears you may not have as much of an online profile regarding animal welfare organization as you once did. Like I recall, you were involved to varying extents with Farm Sanctuary, PETA, Best Friends, and had notations, if not actual endorsements, on your website. So are you still supporters of one or more of those organizations?
Yeah, I still support all of them, but I'm just not actively involved as I used to be. What is good about it is because I spent so much time with them, I really got an education about animals and animal treatment and shelters and so forth and so on. So it was a great education spending that much time in such an intense way with them.
Yeah, so it sounds like you're still committed. It's just that for a while there, you were doing a lot of stuff. And again, like I said, endorsing them on your website. And so Sounds like it's you're still feel the same way, just not quite as active in that regard.
Yeah, I became too distracted by my work and other things like that. But I still have such a love for humane treatment of animals.
Is there a particular animal issue at the moment that still feel as strongly as ever about that you want to speak about now?
Well, there's a lot of those animal issues that I feel. You know, there's trapping and the steel jaw. I'm pleased to see that there's more shelters that are no-kill shelters, and they're finding homes for these animals. And, awareness has been raised about all of the inhumane treatment of animals, from, you know, seal clubbing to, you know, mistreatment of any animal.
Yeah.
So I'm kind of aware of that, and I try to spread that around, too.
For sure. So this is Talking Animals. If you just tuned in, my guest is Kevin Nealon, the actor, comedian, longtime animal advocate, and host of the aerobically impressive YouTube series Hiking with Kevin. He's touring behind his latest stand-up special and will be performing March 27th and 28th. That's this Friday and Saturday at Side Splitters in Tampa. If you'd like to ask Kevin a question yourself or offer a comment, please call 813-239-9663. Email TJ at WMNF.org or text 813-433-0885. So you're also a supporter of the Appalachian Trail Conservancy. Tell me about the Conservancy and what it means to you.
Well, the Appalachian Trail Conservancy has really been a steward for the Appalachian Trail for so long. And, you know, that Appalachian Trail is the longest hiking-only trail in the United States. So I think it's really important to keep that trail going and you know, raise awareness. What one of the messages they had me doing is to change the meaning of go take a hike from being something that was negative to dismissing something that was annoying.
Yeah.
To actually go take a hike, you know, get out there and get some fresh air, you know, do a little meditating and, you know, get some exercise.
Well, that's cool. I like that.
Yeah.
A nice spin on what was kind of a fairly dismissive phrase.
Yeah, but trying to get that name changed in the dictionary, all the major dictionaries.
Wow. That's ambitious.
Yeah, that is. That is. I don't know how difficult it is to get a word changed. It's not like Wikipedia where you can just go in there, you know, add whatever you want.
Yeah. Well, it's also the idea that it's a phrase more than a word. So then you're changing the meaning. That's probably maybe a bigger uphill battle, but I like the idea.
Yeah, I wonder if they have a dictionary or something online where you could just, you know, it's just for phrases, it's not words.
Yeah, I'm sure there is.
I was watching on Instagram some of these things. They tell you how these terms came to be. You know, like riding shotgun. That was when, you know, the cowboy in the old days on the stagecoach would ride in the passenger seat with a shotgun in case they were about to get robbed, you know, any robbers, and, you know, break a leg, all those things.
And what was break a leg? Because that's obviously a common sort of showbiz expression, but what was the original?
Well, break a leg actually it comes from, hang on a second, I can't quite remember, but...
Oh, I didn't mean to give you a homework assignment right off the bat. Jeez, that's...
That's okay. I think it's important for somebody in my business to kind of know the origin of that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, there are a lot of them, that's for sure. Go ahead.
I was going to say, we can come back to that if it's not handy. I just was interested in that just because that's become so commonly used. It's used outside of showbiz frequently, too. If someone's got a speech or an important meeting or, you know, whatever it might be, they might say break a leg to that person.
Yeah. It has something to do with show business.
Okay. That's going to have to be sufficient for now. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it's a way of saying good luck to
for
somebody.
For sure. Yeah.
As a performer.
Okay, gotcha.
Okay, here's exactly what it is, because I AI'd it. Early stages had a leg line, the edge of the curtain. If you broke the leg line, it meant you went on stage and performed. So that's kind of what it
is. So it's not necessarily suggesting that you did well. It's just suggesting you were there.
Well, the bowing thing is also part of it. When actors take a bow, they bend at the knee. That's called breaking the leg. So hope you perform well enough to get applause.
Okay, well, that makes more sense then. Yeah, because obviously the performance has to go well if you're going to do that bow. So
yeah, now aren't you glad you asked me that?
Yeah. We all learned something here, so that's very good. But back to the Appalachian Trail, which in a way may bring us to Hiking with Kevin, because to me, like most really great ideas, the strength of that show is its simplicity. For those listening who maybe haven't seen Hiking with Kevin, can you describe the show a little bit?
Sure. It's a show that kind of organically was developed. I was hiking with a friend of mine, Matthew Modine. He's an actor. And I was just asking him, you know, we were just having a conversation, but the hill was so steep, the mountain, that we were out of breath and we could barely understand each other. And to ask one question took maybe, you know, 30 seconds. And so I videotaped that and I posted it on Twitter at the time. And people really liked it. So I started doing longer versions and I started developing a format for it, some kind of structure. And I've done about 170 of these hikes over the past, I don't know, 6 years. And everyone from Conan O'Brien to Tom Hanks, Sheryl Crow, Molly Shannon, just a lot of fun people.
Yeah.
We just kind of chat. And I noticed that when you're out in the open, in the, you know, in the open air like that, you let your guard down a lot more. And people are much more forthcoming. And, you know, and it's people can relate to it because they, you know, see, oh, these people are, you know, hiking too. And another thing, Duncan, is I used to pass people on the trail and I hear their conversations and there was, some of them were really entertaining. You know, I heard one guy ask his wife, do you think it's okay if I go golfing tomorrow? And then another one where a guy was walking with these five or six kids and he was talking about the black hole in the universe. And wow. I was really interested in the conversation. So I turned around sort of following them.
Joe, so were you able to sort of incorporate their conversation into Hiking with Kevin?
No, because I wasn't actually doing the show at the time.
Oh, I see. You just passed them by at that moment. Yeah, I got you. No, that's great. Because I was going to ask, and you kind of really addressed it, if being on a hike seems to influence the way a conversation goes. And it sounds like, from your standpoint, you get people more open and kind of free and less guarded, maybe more candid. That kind of,
yeah, because also, you know, it's just me. I have a selfie stick with a GoPro at the end and I edit it when I get home. So there's no, occasionally they'll show up and say, where's your crew? Where's the, I'll say, no, it's just me. It's just me. So they're surprised about that.
And do you find that there's quite a range of people who find a hike really demanding and other people who are, you know, inveterate hikers and just find it breezy and easy?
Yeah, you know what? When they show up with a cup of coffee, I know they're not serious about it.
Yeah, that's not really what we had in mind. Yeah.
But, you know, everybody typically that comes, and it's not a real strenuous hike. It's more of a walk in a canyon with some incline. Yeah. And it's getting less and less of an incline every year.
Oh, that's great. Well, it's good to be in charge.
Yeah, exactly.
And you find sometimes I've noticed in sort of random samplings, just going back to watch some other ones that I hadn't seen in a while. Some people seem to be very snarky about your interview style, which I find hilarious. Because, I mean, it seems like one of the natures we've already kind of touched on of Hiking with Kevin is that it's very relaxed and it's, you know, you're not looking at prepared notes or whatever because you're hiking and you also have your selfie stick. You're kind of busy. So, yes, people sometimes tease you about the interview questions. And Conan and Bill Burr, some other people have given you a rough time.
Yeah, and that's what I enjoy that. You know, I love pushing those buttons and getting that up. Conan, you know, Conan O'Brien gets really kind of annoyed how my questions are so random and I change the subject so quickly.
Yeah.
And that's part of it, too. When I know these people, I've known Conan for 35 years or so, you know, it's fun to tease each other and not be so rigid. And I enjoy that the most. And it is like hiking regularly with somebody. It's not like when you're on a hike with somebody, you don't have a rigid format. You're just kind of talking and you change the subject quickly. And, you know, that's the fun of it.
And given that this is still ultimately kind of a show, are there instances where people say, hey, I'd really like to talk about such and such, or I'd really not like to talk about such and such?
I've asked some celebrities about, you know, the girl they just broke up with, you know, that was kind of high profile. And they say, I'd rather not talk about that.
Sure.
And of course, I'll say, well, it's my hike. So, and you don't know how to get back. So we've got to talk about it.
I do have you here. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's great. Did I read somewhere that Hiking with Kevin is being developed into a more of a sort of a broadcast TV series, or is that something?
We briefly licensed 10 episodes to Fox Nation. And they ran their course. So now it's on YouTube and we're reaching out to other people now too that are, they seem interested in it. So, you know, fingers crossed.
Yeah. Well, it's one of those things that, I mean, you know, in the realm of like, everybody's got their own podcast. I mean, this is not two or three or four people sitting around in front of mics gabbing. I mean, I don't even know if you consider it even in the podcast realm, but it's certainly, you know, fresh and different, and there's conversations that emerge from it that, again, I doubt would come up out of any other setting or structure. So
yeah, I never considered it a podcast. In fact, I get insulted when people call it a podcast.
Okay, well, that's why I was treading carefully there. So
yeah. I mean, I don't get really insulted. I just think, well, that's not really what I call it. But I think of it more as a web series, I guess.
Or yeah,
probably in between a web series and a podcast.
Yeah, I think these days when people are talking, wherever they are, whatever the context, it's like almost glib, but they kind of say, well, this is a podcast, but I don't think yours is. And again, I just think the conversation that emerges from that and the variety of things that people probably wouldn't talk about in another setting is part of its many strengths.
Yeah, I think so. It's it's something that I've been doing, like I said, for a long time. And every time I think, well, I think this has run its course, and, you know, it's a lot of work to edit it and all that. It takes up a lot of my time. And I think, well, I think this will be my last one. And then invariably I'll run into somebody and they'll say, I love your hiking show, man. You got to keep doing it.
Oh, that's right. And that's just enough to keep you going?
Yeah. And then I go back and say, all right, well, you know, I guess people are watching it, so I'll do it. But yeah, more and more people are finding it. It's on YouTube, Hiking with Kevin. The actual channel is called youtube.com/Kevin Nealon Comedy. But, you know, if you just type in Hiking
with
Kevin.
Super easy to search for it and just find, you know, Kevin Hiking, Kevin Nealon.
Yeah, the name of the person you want to see as my guest on there.
Yeah.
So it's been going great.
Any guests coming up that haven't been on the show that people should know about now?
Well, I'm actually in my hotel room right now in Florida editing Tiffany Haddish hike.
Oh, wow.
Yeah,
she's always fun.
She's so fun. This is like the third one she's done for me. We're good friends, and we ran into actually Terry Hatcher on the trailer with her daughter, and that was fun.
Wow. You probably don't run into people like that too often. You probably just run into other hikers, but not necessarily other celebs, typically.
Yeah, it's funny. I was also hiking with Fred Armisen once from SNL, and we ran into Dana Carvey, who was hiking.
Wow. Now that's getting to be a super small world. Let's take a call.
Yeah.
We got somebody who wants to be in on the conversation here. Hi, you're on Talking Animals with Kevin Nealon.
Hi. I just want to say I'm been a fan of your work, and I appreciate you doing Duncan's show. I've never heard you on Duncan's show before, but I'm glad you're here in town in Tampa. I may be able to come down and see you at Side Splitters, but I'm not sure. But I have two questions, if you can answer them. One is a specific one. I think I heard Duncan say in the introduction you're either vegan or vegetarian, and I'm wondering how that came about. And a broader question has to do with celebrity and public notoriety. I'm just curious. I'm a particular fan of comedy, so I'm wondering, with your fellow comedian friends, how do they feel about folks who stand up for animals and in using their public, I hate to use the word celebrity, but let's just say notoriety for causes for animals. And I will say my favorite hike, I've watched your hiking show. My favorite one, I think it was several years back now, was with Lin-Manuel Miranda in New York.
Yeah. That was a great one. That was a lot of fun. We hiked in this wooded area up near the Heights, they call it, in New York, along the Hudson. And he told me this is where he wrote most of Hamilton, on the trails in there. So that was kind of exciting.
That's cool. That's great.
Yeah. So I learned about vegetarianism and veganism, and I'm not a vegan, but I learned about factory farming and slaughterhouses from several different books. And also my wife at the time was an activist. So I kind of became involved in that kind of fashion right there. And as far as, you know, having some notoriety as a celebrity, I think it's great to be able to help a cause with that. And some celebrity friends of mine, they're doing it too. And I love seeing when they visit a shelter and they're spreading the word about how animals, you know, need to be, you know, they're not guilty of anything. They just, they need to be adopted and find a home. They're just guilty of not having a home. That's all it is. So yeah, I'm all for that. And I think people, other celebrities, friends of mine appreciate the work that I've been doing.
Yes. Well, I do too. Thank you for your animal welfare work.
All right. Thank you so much for your call. Appreciate it.
Bye-bye.
So one of the great things, I guess, about hiking with Kevin is the Lin-Manuel Miranda thing suggests is that you can do it if you're on the road or you're traveling or whatever. It's pretty simple to just figure out where you're going. Tampa, you're in New York, you're wherever you are. You can just do it that afternoon before your show.
Yeah, as far as editing and stuff, I can do it most of the day. But, you know, also, Duncan, I bring my camera with me often. If I'm traveling, in case I run into some celebrity, and I'll ask them if they want to do it. I went to Ireland a couple of years ago, and I saw that Paul Reiser was shooting a movie there, so I brought my camera, and we did a hike in Ireland, which is really cool.
Oh, wow. Now, is anybody that you invite, whether spur of the moment like that or otherwise, reluctant just because maybe they're not big hikers or maybe they don't feel like they're in great shape and would worry about being out of breath talking with you?
Yeah, I'll send out, you know, I went through all my friends to go do these hikes, and, you know, now I'm kind of contacting publicists to ask if, you know, whatever the client is would do it. And sometimes they don't get back to me. Other times they do, and people can't do it because they're working, or they can do it, which is great. Although, you know, I did ask Larry David to do it from Curb Your Enthusiasm.
Oh my God, how did that go?
Not good.
No.
Not well. I texted him and I said, Larry, do you want to do this this hike? I have this hiking show. I thought you'd be a great guest to be on there, and it's a really easy hike. And Larry David, he texted me back. He goes, no, I don't want to do it, period.
Wow. No wasted words there for old Larry.
Nope.
And that's funny because, you know, one of the many things that to me stands out about Larry David is this very brisk gait when he's walking anywhere. And so think, you know, all you have to do is get outside where there's some ground and you'd still walk the way you walk and you'd probably have a great hike, but he wasn't having any part of it.
That's true.
This is Talking Animals. I'm Duncan Strauss. I'm speaking with actor, comedian, animal advocate Kevin Nealon, who will be performing Friday and Saturday, March 27th and 28th at Side Splitters in Tampa. We invite you to join the conversation if you'd like by calling 813-239-9663. Emailing DJ at WMNF.org or texting 813-433-0885. And of course, you don't have to be on a hike right now. So that's easy for people to pose a question to Kevin and just sit in the comfort of your room or office or house or whatever. So at any given moment, you're involved with other projects, sometimes decidedly not comedy related. Notable example is you and your wife, Susan Yeagley, are executive producer on Come See Me in the Good Light, a documentary that was nominated for an Oscar. It's a beautiful, really enormously poignant film, and I was sorry it didn't win the Oscar. Maybe you could describe what struck you and your wife about the film initially and how you ended up serving as executive producers.
I'm glad you liked it, Duncan. My wife and I are a team, part of the team of executive producers on there, and it's quite a collection of you know, Brandi Carlile's on there, Sarah Bareilles, you know, and Tig Notaro is the producer. So it's among other people. But here's how it came about. My wife and I and my son were walking in Larchmont Village, which is in Los Angeles. It's a cute little street with a lot of coffee shops and things like that. And Tig Notaro is walking down the street on the phone, and we see her, and I've known Tig for a long time. And we say hi, and she gets off the phone, and we ask her what she's up to. And she told us that she is producing a documentary and trying to get it off the ground about Andrea Gibson, this poet laureate that she's been friends with for a long time, and their partner, Megan Fowley. So it's basically a love story. It's about these two poets, and Andrea Gibson, the poet laureate, is diagnosed with inoperable cancer. And it's how they face that and how they deal with it with such radical joy and the perception that they have of it. It's really, you know, it sounds like one of those movies that would be depressing, you know, the documentary, but it is really so uplifting, and it's funny. It's surprisingly funny. It's a radical joy in a lot of places. People are really responding, if they go to see it, are responding so positively about it. And they say that it's changed their lives, you know, the way they look at life. And it's very uplifting.
Yeah, I think there's so much grace to the film, and I think for people who have seen it, just the way people, the main folks featured in the film, are responding to devastating news, and I think helpful for people that have people going through cancer or loss in their own life. I mean, it's really, again, just a gorgeous film, and people who haven't seen it yet, they really should. Again, it's Come See Me in the Good Light, and Is there a new film, maybe one not yet released, that you are similarly involved with, Kevin?
Yeah, there's a couple that I'm acting in that are coming out very soon. One is called Mermaid, which is about this. These are all like independent films.
Okay.
And this one is called Mermaid, and it's kind of a thriller. It's about this mermaid who's actually kind of a monster.
The mermaid's creature. Kind of a monster. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. It's very the face is like, almost looks like an alien. And anyway, it kind of lurks in the water and gets onto boats and kills people. And Johnny Pemberton plays, he's the lead in the movie, and he kind of is a Percocet addict, and he gets the mermaid who's wounded because Tom Arnold shot the mermaid. And he takes the mermaid in and keeps it sedated on Percocet.
Wow.
That's not really the log line of the movie, but it's
no,
really,
I'm sure that's not the normal description that people are giving when they're promoting the movie, but the fact that you laughed that hard just when you were recounting that part makes me laugh.
Yeah, I just cut to the chase, man. And then there's another movie. These two just were at the South by Southwest Film Festival. One is called Same But Different, and that was filmed in Cape Cod. That's about these three Persian women that go out to Cape Cod. One of the Persian women is set up to marry the son of a very wealthy guy so she can get her green card. And she doesn't really know him, but she falls in love with him during the process. And the other one is called Plant Boy and Blondie. And that's a real off-the-wall film that it's even hard to describe what it is. But it's
more off-the-wall than the mermaid film with all the Percocet?
Not only is it off the wall, it's off the map.
Okay.
And dare I say, I have one more film. I'm not sure when it's coming out, but it's a really touching film that Jeremy John Wells wrote. And let's see, I've done so many films. Let me see what the name of it is. Maybe We Should, it's called. Maybe We Should.
Wow. So you're really making a lot of films these days, it sounds like. More of a clip than maybe it would be typical.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a lot of people that are making films out there. And I don't know if it's easier to do it now because of technology or what, but I'm happy to be part of them. I'm glad I'm considered for these roles.
Yeah. And do you like acting in that regard?
I do. You know, Duncan, I'm really lucky because I get to do everything. I get to write. You know, I like to write a lot.
Yeah.
I get to act, and I get to do stand-up comedy. I'm also an artist, so I have a book out called I Exaggerate, My Brushes
With
Flame.
Oh, yeah, the sketches, the drawings.
I paint caricatures of celebrities, and now I have an art store on Spotify. I mean, not Spotify, but Shopify at KevinNealonArt.com. And I'm just staying real busy. You know, I just love, I love what I'm doing.
That's great. That sounds really good. Well, we're talking, and this kind of brings me to a question I thought about last couple of days. We're talking a couple of days now before your weekend of shows at Side Splitters, and your calendar is sort of brimming with similar weekend gigs across the country, and you've been doing stand-up for a long, long time. To what extent do you experience, let's say, maybe mixed feelings about the next gig as they're coming up? Like, it's more travel, it's more being away from the family and so on. And to what extent do you, on the other hand, relish the opportunity to do another show and can't wait to get on stage?
That's an interesting question. I do have quite an elaborate schedule coming up. People can check it out on KevinNealon.com. I go through, it's like a roller coaster for me with performing on the road. Sometimes I love it. Other times I'll be in a hotel depressed, like in some city in the middle of Ohio, you know, some smaller hotel. And then the next thing you know, I take 2 weeks off, and then I can't wait to get back out there again. And it's a lot easier now, too, because my son just went off to college, and I always felt badly being away, like on a weekend where I could be with him,
sure,
going to a football game or something. But now that he's at college, I'm not that, sad that I'm not home. I do miss my wife, but it's,
thank God you quickly added that. I was going to mention that. Yeah. That might be an issue. Yeah.
Yes, but I do love stand-up. I've been doing it a long time. It's always been my passion. Before any acting, SNL or Weeds or any of those shows.
Right.
Yeah, it's what I
so do you think kind of what's at that fundamental long-standing zeal, is it just love of the next good joke or maybe the next good laugh?
I love everything about it. I love the craftsmanship of writing a joke.
Yeah.
I like the audience. I like the response I get. I like the challenge of writing a new joke and seeing if it works or not. I like the camaraderie between the other comedians. And I, you know, I like being liked, basically.
Yeah. No, that's great, because again, I just think a lot of people that have done it as many years as you have, there's sometimes seems that there's more of a love and hate thing, just because of what goes, everything that goes to getting on stage. Once they're on stage, of course, they're happy as a clam, but it's a lot of the getting there and the traveling and again, missing family or, you know, just all kinds of conflicts.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I'm lucky because I have this passion and I have this interest in something, and I always implore people to look for their passion if they don't really see it in front of them, and try to find it, and, you know, spend your whole life doing that and not, you know, working a job that you don't like.
Well, not
unless
to...
it's totally necessary and, you know, you can't, you need the money or whatever. But
Well, also it seems like in your case, all the things that we've been talking about, or at least touched on briefly, all came one way or another through stand-up. Like, that's obviously SNL came there, but I mean, some of the acting opportunities are because people are aware of you from other acting opportunities. So it's probably not directly from stand-up in all cases, but everything kind of could be rooted back to stand-up in one way or another.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, the stand-up landscape has changed a lot too. There's, as you know, it's become such a accessible career for people. People, because of social media, everybody's doing stand-up comedy now. Before, it used to be so novel. I remember knowing every comedian there was in the Hollywood circuits and New York, and I knew their act by heart because I saw them so many times. I was in the clubs all the time. And now it's really, I mean, it's just, it's like people who want to ride on a roller coaster, you know, they just jump on and they have a great time, and it's just, and there's a lot of funny people out there. So that's great. And there's a lot of accessibility through social media. So yeah, it certainly has changed a lot.
And that's a good time to mention again, as I did at the top of the show, your latest stand-up special is Loosen the Crotch. And that's also on YouTube, and you can search for that. And it seemed like you had a lot of fun. Was that at the Irvine Improv or?
That was at the Irvine Improv. Yeah. It seats about 500 people. And
yeah.
It was great crowds, and I started at the Improv in Hollywood. I used to go there and just hang out, and because I knew of that place, it was famous, and I knew that's where the comedians went. So I would go there, and I was every night I'd go there pretty much. And so whenever I had any visitors coming out from Connecticut, which is where I grew up, they wanted to see Hollywood. I wouldn't know anything. I wouldn't know it as well as they did, and I would bring them to the Improv. I said, "This is the Improv. This is where I hang out." And I became a bartender there for a couple of years. And I would get on stage whenever I could and just start working on my craft and watch the other comics, Andy Kaufman, Robin Williams, Jay Leno, David Letterman, Albert Brooks. I mean, it was incredible.
Yeah, it's a great history of the clubs unfolding and, you know, how many improvs there at the peak there was. I think there's fewer now than there was at the peak, but so many improvs across the country and all kind of have great tied to showbiz history and launching all kinds of great comics. So, but yeah, that looked like the Irvine Improv. That was old stomping grounds of mine many moons ago. So,
yeah.
And I really enjoyed the special too, by the way. That's, you know, and that also made me think about stuff over the years. You've laced your stand up act with bits about animals and, you know, sometimes playful, sometimes absurdist, whatever observations. How did those come about? I mean, why have animals been an ongoing source of material for you, do you think?
Well, because I grew up with animals, and they play such a big part of my life. And then I got involved in animal issues, activism. And animals are just a big part of the world, and they really are funny. People ask me who makes me laugh the most, and it's young children, and it's animals. Because they're both so innocent, and they're honest about whatever the issue is around them.
Yeah. And there's a certain absurdism that goes with at least some of your animal bits that obviously I think you see them doing something or not doing something, and then it's just there's something super amusing to you about what happens next.
Yeah, there's so many great Instagram posts about, you know, dogs and cats, and I mean they're hilarious. Some of them are just amazing.
Yeah, that's great. Well, we're sort of nearing the end of our time here, Kevin. Anything else we should know, either that's coming up or just that we haven't touched on, even on a topic including break a leg. We do know a lot more about than we used to. And
I think you were great. You covered everything from the documentary "Come See Me in the Good Light" to the hiking with Kevin to my special "Loosen the Crotch" to my art store, KevinNealonArt.com.
Shopify.
That's on Shopify. Yeah. KevinNealon.com.
I am paying attention.
You are. You certainly are.
Yeah.
And that covers it all, I think.
Okay, cool. Well, again, we've been speaking with Kevin Nealon. Again, this Friday and Saturday is at Side Splitters in Tampa, but there's a lot of dates where maybe you're listening somewhere not in Florida, although actually some of those dates he comes back to Florida, I noticed, in a month, couple months or so. So just go to KevinNealon.com, and all those dates are there, and other projects that we talked about and some things we haven't talked about are there too. So, Kevin, thanks again for joining us on Talking Animals. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Duncan. Always a joy. Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Coming up later in today's program, I'll play back my interview with 9-year-old sea turtle advocate and author Emiliana Fugger. I learned some things about sea turtles and you might too. We'll hear that interview in just a moment. Right now, that we're going to step into the Comedy Corner with Tim Harmson and a piece called Seagull in today's Comedy Corner on Talking Animals on WMNF.
I saw a seagull flying around in the sky. It was going around and around and around. I looked at it and I said, "Seagull, you could be anywhere in the world right now. Why are you in the parking lot at JCPenney's?" And then I thought, why am I in the parking lot at JCPenney's? And then I remembered Arnold Palmer casual wear. 50% off. You look like a jerk if you don't go.
That was Tim Harmson in today's Comedy Corner with a piece called Seagull, taken from his album, The Most Bees Ever. Now it's time to hear my interview with Emiliana Fugger. She's a sea turtle advocate. She's the author of the book Anatomy Under the Sea, The Adventures of Luna the Loggerhead. And she's 9 years old, by the way. Here's Emiliana Fugger on Talking Animals on WMNF. Welcome, Emiliana, to Talking Animals. Thank you for joining us on the show today.
Hi.
I guess one of my first questions is, what did you like so much about sea turtles when you first saw them?
When I first saw them, when I was doing a sea turtle excavation, I saw that they were super duper tiny, and I saw one that was stuck in the wall when my brother found that one, and they were so cute. And they were small and so cute. And I've always loved them since.
And you still do.
Mm-hmm.
So tell me about the science fair project, and because it sounded like that's what you really wanted to focus on when it came time to do a project.
So when I was making the project, I found that there were no books on the inside of a sea turtle. I could only find a college textbook, if that counts as a child's book, because that doesn't count.
Not really, yeah.
I wrote one myself.
That's great. And you just felt like, hey, since one doesn't exist for people like me, I'm going to create one. I'm going to write one.
Yeah.
That's great. What a great solution. And was it hard writing a book? It seems like it might be.
It was hard. It was hard to me, but for some people it might not be hard.
Well, I think anybody, whether they're 9 or a lot older, I think most people I've ever talked to found it difficult to write a book. So I think it's super impressive that you've already written one. For a next book, do you have something in mind?
Mm-hmm.
And what's that going to be? Is that going to be on a different animal, or is that going to be on turtles too?
It's going to be a Spanish version of the loggerhead, because my family's Hispanic. So
yeah.
I personally don't speak Spanish, but I understand it. But I'm getting my mom's cousin to help me with it.
That's great. And so this will be like a Spanish version of the original book that you wrote.
brainstorming the one about to help another book to help. Because the other book, every book that I found at my library was about the outside of a sea turtle, like about the head and the flippers.
Yeah. So you're more interested in their internal, like their organs and their anatomy, kind of?
Yeah, the next book is going to be Spanish, but the next book is about a baby turtle's life cycle, and I'm adding the names of the kids who wanted to be in the book but didn't get to be in the book.
Oh, that's great.
My brother is begging me.
Begging you to be in the book?
I might, but I'm probably shouldn't. And
only if he's really nice to you, probably, right?
And in this page, that's the baby turtles coming out of the beach. So they're going to look just like that.
That's great.
Yeah.
And that model sitting next to you, that's pretty impressive. Tell me a little bit about the model.
So this is the head. These are the flippers. And this is the shell. And the scientific word for shell is carapace.
Mm.
And this is the tail. Did you know that that a short tail means that a sea turtle is a girl, and a long tail means that a sea turtle is a boy? Luna has a short tail, so she's a girl. And only find out, like, if they're a boy or a girl when they're, like, goes through puberty. Luna.
Yeah, but that's how you can tell the difference. That's how everybody, like scientists and people working with turtles rehab and stuff, that's how they tell. I never knew that before. That's great. Show me a little bit inside your model.
So this is the lungs. I put little flags to help me because I wouldn't memorize it. These are the lungs. They're underneath the shell or the carapace.
Yeah.
It's down here.
Oh, wow. That's great.
This is the aorta. This is the right atrium and the left atrium and the ventricle, which looks like an upside down Mickey Mouse. It's technically the whole heart, but it looks like an upside down Mickey Mouse. This is the liver. This is the gallbladder. This is the egg sac. Did you know that the sea turtle can lay 80 to 120 eggs at a time? That's crazy.
They can lay that many at a single time?
Yeah, because they lay their eggs like two or three times a year. So it has like 300 babies, but some of them don't make it though.
Yeah, no, that's a lot of babies, right?
Yeah. Well, sea turtles don't actually stay with their baby. They lay their eggs, then leave to the open ocean. And then when, in a couple months, the baby sea turtles, will come out. But they only do it at night because they're like, when they're first born, they have to look at a big ball of light to get to the ocean, but people that live near the ocean have lights, big yellow lights, to make it look like it looks like the moon to the baby turtles. So people who want this, because I would not want to see a baby turtle at your doorstep. So
yeah, something would have gone wrong if they showed up at the doorstep, right?
Yeah. So that's why people that live near the ocean and want to help wildlife like sea turtles, they would get there's like something called a red light. So they would make the light turn red and sea turtles wouldn't go to the red light.
Yeah. And that's also why people don't. It's
way too bright for them.
Right. Isn't that the same reason that people always are asked not to have flashlights and other kinds of lights out on the beach when it's turtle nesting time? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's why when I was seeing a mama sea turtle lay her eggs, the people who were helping us, I stayed up till 2 that night. So the people who were helping us had red flashlights. And it also, and the red flashlight would also help with bats. When you're in a cave, get a red flashlight. So if you can find bats too.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that. Well, we only have another minute or so here, Emiliana, but I'm guessing you probably already know what you want to be when you grow up.
I want to be a marine biologist.
Why did I have a kind of a sneaking suspicion? That makes sense, yeah. Sounds like you're already well on your way. So,
I feel like I already am.
I know, so do I. And you're only just going to keep going, I'm sure. So what's a really important fact about sea turtles that most people don't know that you know?
My favorite fact, and I feel like the most important fact to me, is that underneath the skin in their flippers, they have fingers just like us. Sea turtles, yeah. Their bones are finger, like, look like fingers. So if I would show you that it was like, it would be like this. I would try like this.
So that's kind of where their flippers are, basically?
Their bones. This would be their bones, and the flipper covers them. So the flippers are, the fingers are just their bones. And they use their flippers to swim.
Right. So they're really kind of almost like having hands when they swim.
Yeah, it's like they're having hands like us, but it's like all connected like this.
Great. All right, one last thing. Is what we've been doing the last few minutes here, is that considered one of your turtle talks?
Yep.
Because that's where you go to classes and museums and other places and give a talk about turtles, just like we've been doing, right?
Yeah. I read my book, then I talk about Luna, and then I answer questions. And I also pass out coloring pages and bookmarks.
Wow. That's great. It sounds like you enjoy doing that.
Oh, and I also have a new thing. I have jokes that...
Oh, really? Give me one of your jokes.
I don't have the jar right now, but I actually remember only one. I do three jokes. One of them is... How do sea turtles call their friends?
I don't know. Tell me.
On their shell phone.
Okay. I like that. That's a great joke.
Joke that my mom just passed to me. How do you know the ocean is friendly?
I give up. You tell me.
It waves. It always waves.
Oh, okay. Great. These are good jokes. You're adding these to your turtle talks, right?
Yep.
That's great. You want to tell me one more?
Yep. I used to do three jokes.
Okay.
I'm out right now. What do you call a famous turtle?
I should know this one, but I can't quite figure it out.
Celebrity.
Oh, that's very good. It makes me want to celebrate, right?
Yeah. Because there's also one that is, what do sea turtles do on their birthday? They celebrate.
Yeah, there you go. Well, we had the same idea. That's very good.
Yeah.
Okay, well, Emiliana, thank you so much for joining us on Talking Animals. I really enjoyed speaking with you, and I'm super impressed about your book and your model, and I'm really happy there's a Spanish version coming out. And thank you for taking the time to speak with me on Talking Animals.
Thank you for inviting me. Bye.
Bye-bye. All right, that was Emiliana Fugger on Talking Animals on WMNF. My thanks to her and her mom, Stephanie. And, of course, not surprisingly, perhaps Emiliana has her own very nice website. You can find that at lunathelogerhead.com. All kinds of information about her turtle talks and the books and appearances, etc. So that's, again, lunathelogerhead.com. Coming up on WMNF, it's The Conversation. The great show hosted by Myra Nunez and Joe King Carter. And then it's The Scoop. WMNF's brief news recap. Then we shift back to music programming with Sam Wall holding forth from 1 to 3, followed by Nancy C hosting the Wednesday Traffic Jam from 3 to 6 p.m. And there's more great stuff following after that here on 88.5 WMNF. Meanwhile, on this show, the moment of the prize for Name That Animal Tune, I'll come up with something fabulous from the Talking Animals Vault. The first person who calls 813-239-9663. and see if you can name this animal tune on Talking Animals on WMNF. Take any guesses off air after the show if you can name that animal tune. Right now, we have reached the end of today's edition of Talking Animals on WMF. Next Wednesday, April 1st, I'll be joined by Armando Ubeda, an expert on sharks. He's a PhD candidate in the Wildlife Ecology and Conservation Department at the University of Florida. His research focuses on shark reproductive behavior and population structure. He's slated to give a talk titled Coastal Sharks of Florida. That's coming up on April 10th as part of the Florida Birding and Nature Festival, running from April 9th through 12th in and around Apollo Beach, featuring seminars, field trips, boats, trips, a nature expo, and more. The website for that is floridabirdingandnaturefestival.org. So I look forward to hearing all about sharks next Wednesday. I'm talking with Armando Ubeda. Also invite you to join us. TalkingAnimals.net for audio archives of every show we've ever broadcast. Apple Podcasts are there too, and other podcast forums, platforms as well. Also, links to our social media page. You can subscribe to our newsletter to find out about our guests a couple of days beforehand, and other scintillating news from the Talking Animals world. I'm Duncan Strauss. Thanks very much for listening. Have a good week. Be kind to animals. Be kind to others. Be kind to yourself. Again, my thanks to Kevin Nealon and Emiliana Future for joining us on Talking Animals today. Stay tuned for the conversation coming up momentarily after and the the scoop instead of NPR News headline, sorry. So this is Talking Animals on WNF Tampa, Brandon, Clearwater, Largo, Weeki Wachee, and beyond. We'll see you next Wednesday here at 88.5 FM WNF Tampa. Take care.